once you've been to Antarctica, you're kind of changed forever, I think. It has such a massive impact in so many ways. You feel very small, you feel very human. You're in awe of the sort of forces down there and the size of the landscape itself. And when I came back from there to carry on painting the way that I had been, just wasn't enough for me. I just wanted to be creative from within, really, and involve the landscape itself. And the geology from Antarctica is something that I don't know much about at all. So I was interested to see what Joe could teach me.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ice. My name's Em Newton, and this is the podcast from British Antarctic Survey where we brief you on the latest polar and climate science. Today, we're doing something slightly different. I'm joined by artist Rowan Huntley and BAS geochemist Dr. Joe Johnson. Together, they've been collaborating on a new exhibition at the Scott Polar Institute's Polar Museum in Cambridge called Through Ice and Fire, which is inspired by Joe's work in Antarctica and on the Unstable Thwaites Glacier. We'll hear from both of them about how their collaboration worked. Now, this isn't the first piece of sci art that BAS has been involved in. In 1997, Sir Peter Maxwell-Davies went to Antarctica to write a new Antarctic symphony. We've had a formal collaboration with the Arts Council, worked with artist Wayne Binity from the Royal College of Art on an installation for COP26 when it was in Glasgow. Elsewhere in the building, Dr. Nigel Meredith has been working with musician Kim Cuneo and engineer-artist Diana Scarborough on the Sound to Space programme, turning data, Antarctic noises and noises from Earth's atmosphere detected at Halley into music. So this collaboration between Joe and Rowan sits in a long and happy tradition of artists and polar scientists reaching across their disciplinary divides to explore the significance of Antarctica to all of us through art.
So how did this collaboration come about? Who approached who?
I approached Joe initially. I'd just finished a master's degree and I was hugely excited to do something with that and be very creative. And I've always been into science and particularly into geology. And having been to Antarctica twice myself, I was keen to link all that up somehow. So I contacted British Antarctic Survey and then Joe answered the call.
I remember sitting around at the meeting and our team leader said, "So who would like to chat with an artist?" You know, I thought, yes, I'll do it. I like art.
What about it interested you? Were you just like into the unknown?
Well, I guess I do like art, so yeah. that was a good start. And I'm always interested in how we can communicate our work. So I thought, oh, this sounds curious, and maybe I'll, you know, and it was just posed as just a chat. I thought it probably won't go anywhere.
Given that you thought it wouldn't necessarily go anywhere, how do you feel having now been to the Polar Museum in South Cambridge and seeing a whole exhibition?
Yeah, I mean, it's very exciting. I mean, I didn't go into it expecting that we would do anything like that. And it would have been fine for me if we hadn't as well, because, you know, just working with Rowan was really interesting for me. And, you know, whatever she put out would be some means of communicating what I do. So, but the exhibition it's very exciting for me because it's kind of official. And I can point people towards it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, Rowan, how early on does the work start for you? How many years was this in the making? How much exploration was involved?
Well, really, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. I've been an artist for over 33 years now, and I was a representational painter of surface landscape for about 25 of that, I think. And then I was the first artist to be awarded the Scott Polar Research, Friends of Scott Polar Research Institute, artist residency in Antarctica. And I went south with HMS Scott in 2010. Oh. And once you've been to Antarctica, you're kind of changed forever, I think. It has such a massive impact in so many ways. You feel very small, you feel very human. You're in awe of the sort of forces down there and the size of the landscape itself. And when I came back from there to carry on painting the way that I had been, just wasn't enough for me. I just wanted to be creative from within, really, and involve the landscape itself a bit more. And the geology from Antarctica is something that I don't know much about at all. So I was interested to see what Joe could teach me about that.
Given this is an audio format, can you describe kind of the difference between the kind of artistic approach that you were taking when you made that first trip and the look and feel and process of this exhibition and how different those artistic processes are?
Okay, well, the first, actually painting on board the ship and around and about, It was looking in observation at the landscape and doing, you know, my utmost to portray that as it was. However, this exhibition really is using the landscape in many ways. So when I discovered that Joe was looking for cobbles in Antarctica that were largely granitic, I decided that, oh, I see what was local to me. And then I kind of followed that pattern through, really. So there's glacial clay from the Ice Age and obviously sand. Sand contains quartz. Quartz is within the granite that Joe then analyses. So there's so many links. So I decided to use those materials along with some intense heat and also freezing. I work with a kiln, a blowtorch and a freezer. And some of the processes that Joe has worked with, and some of them are natural processes, evolutionary processes too, they inspire me. So it's actually putting into the work some of the world itself. It's been great fun, you know, to go into venture into three-dimensional stuff as well. It gives you so much more room to be expressive and creative. And I've investigated several of the processes in several different ways. So I'll be doing painting 1 minute and then, you know, something three-dimensional, trying to realise that process in a different way. So it's been really exciting for me.
So, Jo, when you first had this conversation, what areas of your work were you talking about?
So I guess we sat down and looked at your sketchbooks, didn't we, Rowan, first of all? And I talked about my work, which, as Rowan said, is looking at cobbles in Antarctica. But they're cobbles that have been brought to the sites by ice. And then as the ice retreated, they've been left there sort of high and dry. So I suppose that was a bit of a focus to start with these glacial erratics, we call them. And Rowan has seen those in Gower, where she's from as well. So there's a connection there. And we talked about the processes involved in the technique that I use, which is called exposure dating. And this looks at when ice was last covering a site. And we can tell how the ice sheet has changed in shape and size through time by doing that. And the processes that I do are quite physical in a way. So we crush the rocks, we have to extract out the quartz grains and then put them through various different sort of chemical and physical processes to purify those and then eventually measure the amount of sort of these special isotopes in those that are produced only when cosmic radiation hits their surfaces. Ooh. Which is, you know, it sounds super complicated, but Rowan's managed to pick up on lots of different aspects of this kind of whole process that I go through. And particularly what I like about her work is that she's been investigating the difference of the minerals and how they kind of react in different circumstances under heat. And so she's really, I think, been able to portray quite effectively the kind of sort of physical processes and the practical things that I have to do with the rock samples to get the science out at the end. And that's something that is important. I think often those aspects of my work are kind of glossed over in favour of the sort of the things about climate change that the results can show. But the scientific process and what we actually have to do to get there is quite complicated and something I do want people to understand better.
That's really interesting. And I think one of the things that jumped out at me when I saw this exhibition was how much the place of Antarctica and the place of Gower were in conversation with each other, kind of in the way that both of you were as well. And as you said, the cobbles that you're looking at, these big pieces of granite, have a mirror in Rowan's home location of, is it Gower Peninsula?
Yeah, it's the Gower Peninsula, yeah. So we're surrounded by sea, so obviously rising seas is an issue with us as well. And the ancient raised beach that we have is, you know, a good 5 to 7 metres higher than the tide line today. And that indicates where the sea was once upon a time. So that's fascinating to me as well. It's all this evidence that's kind of hidden in plain sight. A lot of the work is about unlocking information and how Joe can do that. And I like to think that the work itself is unlocking some kind of way into Joe's work, science in general and climate change in general.
So what I see in Rowan's art, I think, is one of the pieces that comes to mind, makes me think of the kind of the otherworldliness of this, the processes that are involved in producing these isotopes that I then measure. And she's sort of captured some of that kind of hiddenness, I suppose. I didn't come into it with any sort of preconceived ideas about what Rowan would produce. And I think I hope I'm not too protective about my work. So I've allowed her, I think, the freedom to just kind of go away and do.
You have.
I think I've also been sometimes fairly frank about what I thought of one or two things.
You have.
And there's one piece that I do struggle with a little bit. I think because I gave you a graph, didn't I? Do you remember with the data points on it? And what you produce looks a bit like that graph in the sense that it's got these sort of spherical kind of blobs, I suppose, of material and then some metal wires and things. And then you had it in a video being kind of washed away in the sea, didn't
you? I filmed it on the beach at the tide line with the waves coming in. But interestingly, that's one that's actually, you know, garnered a lot of interest in the exhibition. I was speaking to people about it.
I didn't like it because I didn't like the idea that it was sort of being washed away. And it was almost, I think in a way, it's too, slightly for me, it's a little bit too representational of the data plot, which didn't...
Right, well, let me undo the representation. I look at the materials. And I've used, this is the one that's got rusty rebar grid that you would use to build concrete walls or something, but they're set vertically into a cement block. Now, cement manufacture is one of the most polluting manufacturing processes you can get. So that's me working with limestone on our beach used to be turned into lime for cement making. On that cement base, there are number indications that you would normally get in a canal, you know, to see what the water level is. So that's an indication that maybe it's to do with water. On the grid themselves, I have made little balls of it's a ceramic paste and it's made of the local sand, the local clay. Those are my data plots and they have a little wing either side, which is copper metal. So again, that's bringing in the industrial side of it. There are two aluminium curved pieces coming out because in the graph that Joe showed me was the parameters of the data. Really, it's about all graphs. It's not about a particular one, and I wasn't putting anything on it in that respect. It's representative of sort of like, again, the industrial impacting the climate and particularly to do with sea level rise. But the reason I took it to the beach was to put it in a sea context, you know, and have waves washing over it. It's fairly sturdy. It wouldn't have been washed away. So, yes, but funnily enough, in the exhibition one afternoon when I was in there and people were looking, one lady was looking at it and she'd been in the other part of the Spry Museum, looking at the historical things. And she came through into mine, contemporary work, and I was looking at that and was saying, oh, I can see all sorts of things in there. I can see the mast of a ship. And she said, you know, she said that concrete block at the bottom, it must be like hitting the ice, you know. So it's fantastic. You know, it's great to hear how people's brains are working, you know. But at that point, she hadn't actually read anything and I hadn't said anything about the piece. But, you know, these conversations... It's a conversation starter.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Whatever direction that goes, it's a bonus.
I think it's important to say, I think it doesn't really matter whether I like it or not. That was just a sort of personal reflection. But actually, that's not what the... I don't mind if you take things the way that I perhaps don't like, because it's a conversation starter, isn't it?
And it's a conversation between us. You know, what you put out there and I grab hold of... you know, you have been very generous in the fact that you haven't said, oh, I can't have that done in this way or anything yet.
I've never felt like I wanted to say that because I didn't want to sort of constrain you. I was just curious to see what you would produce. And then I think also it's a process for me of reflection. So, you know, what you produce, I look at it, I have a thought. And then a few months later, I might look again and think, oh, actually, I'm thinking something different now.
Yeah. But I think going back to your point about the person who came out of one area of the Polar Museum and into your exhibit, it is really interesting because there are a couple of pieces where they have placed your pieces in the museum part of it. And for anyone who's not been to the Polar Museum, it is an artefact museum of items, I think largely kind of from what you would call the heroic age of polar exploration. Yeah. So there's some amazing objects that kind of really give you some of the detail of that history and kind of inspire people to engage with the poles in very particular ways. And then you've got this very contrasting kind of invitation to imagine and engage. And I think it's really interesting that they've allowed the two to merge a little bit. And what do you think the effect of sitting those two things side by side is?
It's a surprise when you're looking through all the historical bits and pieces. There are three objects in the case. There's one painting, and that's based on looking through a microscope at the imagery you see, so it's very colourful. In the foreground, there's a piece which I've called Rising Seas, and it's actually disintegrating. It's made out of pewter and canvas. And ice was involved, but obviously the ice is no longer there. And seawater as well, again, to indicate the Rising Seas link. And over the 18 months since I made it, 2 years since I made it, it has begun to disintegrate because of the impact of the salt water on the pewter itself. So that's the idea, really, because that's the message, you know, these things disintegrate everything, you know, if it's left, will eventually you know, break down. And as Jo touched on earlier, you know, she breaks up rock in order to look for her isotopes. So I've been mirroring that and breaking rock in several different ways and for different reasons.
There's some contrast there as well, aren't there? There's sort of destructive processes of both what I do and some of what you've been representing as well. And then the reconstruction, which is really what my work is about, is reconstructing how ice sheets looked in the past, and that, you know, can help us sort of validate models that project how the future evolution of the ice sheet is going to occur.
Also, the preservation activity that the rest of the museum is kind of undertaking when you've got all of these artefacts, kind of they're attempting to kind of freeze them in time, prevent them from changing, and then you've created a piece of art that is changing over time because of kind of the material qualities of it. And that's part of the point of it, whereas I guess the rest of the museum is kind of pushing the other direction in a way. It's quite interesting. In terms of that piece called Rising Seas, Jo, do you want to just give us a bit of context for the kind of the wider relationship between Antarctica and sea level rise and why that feels like a kind of key point as a scientist when you're talking about polar science?
So it's hot topic right now. You know, we know that the Earth's climate is warming as a result of carbon dioxide increasing in the atmosphere, and this is causing the ice sheets to melt, in a sense. Yeah. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it. And the melting of those ice sheets is raising global sea level. And we need to understand sort of how fast and how and when these changes are going to occur in the future. So in order to adapt and mitigate to sea level rise, which is going to occur all around the world, it's happening already, and it's accelerating. And the Antarctic ice sheet contains enough water to raise global sea level by 58 metres. Now, that's the whole of the Antarctic ice sheet if that melted, which, you know, is not going to happen in our lifetime for sure. But, yeah, we do know that the rising sea level is already affecting people around the world, and Antarctica has a big role in that. And if the ice sheets melt into the future, then there's potential for runaway retreat in some areas, particularly in West Antarctica, that will cause sort of quite rapid sea level rise potentially. And we need to understand those things much better. There's a lot of uncertainty involved in the projections of how sea level will look in future at the moment.
I just wanted to say something about, you know, climate change is physically impacting the planet, but also in my work there's an element of the reactions of humanity to climate change issues. There was one painting in particular called Turmoil, and it's a real conflict of hot and cold. And it was just me, you know, being physical about how I feel about things. And I think that draws attention to the fact that people have this, it's not, well, I don't know if it's the right word, argumentative sort of response to something that they don't understand much about, or, you know, if they deny that it's, you know, or try to say that it's cyclical, which partly it is, but my artwork's kind of based on my thoughts about all of this.
Yeah.
And I think behind it all is a hope that people will be able to latch onto something and get a toe in the door, either scientifically or artistically or both, to start asking questions. Whatever those questions may be, they're valid.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just another way of communicating, and I think it's a good way of communicating, because when people can see something, be in the company of something, encounter something, you know, that is a personal experience to them, and they can react in whatever way that they want to. It's different to reading about something or to being forced to listen about something.
It means that we can hopefully communicate some of the science or the processes or these things to people who we wouldn't normally, as scientists, come into contact with, or, you know, people who are put off by data and plots and all, you know, reading.
Yeah.
So for me, it's really important to engage with everybody if we can, but that's really hard. This is a way of reaching yet another group of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess with the opportunity of art is to give people other ways into science as well. Obviously, for scientists, it's an interesting provocation if you understand this topic already. But if it's something that's new to you, then it's finding a hook or something that you can relate to conceptually or in your life that kind of starts that new train of thinking on this topic. Could we talk about atoms in motion? It's quite a fun piece. It's got many bits that look like they move. I don't know if they actually do.
They do move, and I guess there's a bit of science in that as well, because although I turn a handle to move something and use a foot pump to move something, I'm actually using kinetic energy in order to move bits around, and that's kind of what a mass spectrometer does. So, yeah, it's a piece that grew out of wanting to show the bigger picture. Everything is carefully chosen. I guess it's an assembled sculpture. It has bits on it that are made, as in what I call a clepsydra, which is an ancient water clock that you use dripping in or dripping out of water to measure the passing of time. So I was looking at that about time, because this is all to do with time. Mm. So I created that out of metal wires, meshes and ceramic paste. So there are holes in it, which you wouldn't get in a normal clepsydra. So mine drips out some sea salt, which I made from evaporating seawater. So again, that's a scientific process. There's a small old-fashioned metal ruler, which is folded in half and looks like 2 minutes to midnight type clock face. And that's attached to a handle, which turns it anti-clockwise backwards, because we want to be turning things backwards, really. Yeah. The two wooden posts that are there are actually part of our old coastal path on Gower. Yeah. The council were redoing it and we're chucking away the wood. So as ever, it's like, I'll have those, they'll be useful. that in itself, you know, tells a story, people enjoying the coast path. All of these things come together to indicate what the mass spectrometer does. Mm. So I have a handle which turns, and it's got a little cog on the end of it with bouncy little round bits which are paper mache atoms. And there's three different colours on there, so that's to indicate this is what they do. They bob around, they're on springs. You move down from that and there's some copper pipe work at the bottom, and that's to indicate, you know, where I'm from, on the edge of industrial South Wales, it was copper smelting, you know, in its heyday. It was the place to be for copper. So that ties in, and that comes then to a jar which is attached to a foot pump. So there's this big glass jar and it's filled with little tiny balls, three different colours again to show the atoms. And then I can operate a foot pump, again with the kinetic energy there, and it blows the balls around inside the jar. So in a real mass spectrometer, you can calibrate it to be able to count specific atoms. So there's a little, using a coffee grinder actually, an old-fashioned coffee grinder, a little wooden box there, it's lovely. It has a little drawer in it, so you can pull the drawer out, and inside that drawer are little ceramic green ones. So those are the green atoms. This is just to indicate that, you know, they have been separated out. It's not actually really separating anything out, you know, but... Yeah. But people are fascinated by that, and I had a grown gentleman ask me the other day if it really did that, you know. And it, you know, yeah. I had a three-year-old ask me that as well. But you can look at the thing and you can wonder what it is, or you can ask a few questions and you can get a bit more information.
But it invites conversation. And it represents so many different, thoughts that you want people to start to try and link together. Mm. And in some ways, the piece does that. It kind of weaves together all these different strands and things that you want people to start to lock in with and engage with.
Yeah.
So how did this collaboration feel? Do you feel that you've learned from each other, or that you've given each other particular things? What stands out for you?
It's been quite a process, I think. she's been very good throughout, sort of reminding me to send her stuff. Because we had COVID in the middle of all of this, so we couldn't meet in person. And in fact, we have only met in person two or three times, once at the beginning, and then there was a big 5-year gap, and then again. So it's been quite unusual in that sense. And the sort of things that Rowan asked me to send was really anything. I was like, oh, gosh, you know, what do I send? So, yeah, one day I did send a data plot, because that's just what I was working on at the time. Some new videos of me doing things in the field. Some noises from the field as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much more. It's such a massive, massive area to work with. There's so much more I could do. And, you know, I mean, even as the exhibition's on, you know, when I get the chance to be back in the studio, I'll be following up stuff that I've started and see where that takes me. Because there's not an element of what's this going to be, this is going to be something. I'll just see where it takes me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there are so many more that, like you say, about sound and some imagery. It would have been nice to have done some extra bits on that. But we ran out of time.
Well, come back in another 5 years. We'll have an audiovisual exhibition. Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, just after we'd met, we then went into lockdown. So for 3 years, really, I was just researching and reading and looking into what Joe did. A lot of my work is actually, it's like a work in progress, actually. Even the exhibition is like a work in progress. Mm. It's all about my investigations into materials, investigations into the processes on both natural materials, industrial materials. I'm constantly testing things and seeing what happens. I like putting things in the kiln and, you know, if it blows up, it blows up. It's not.
And those processes of creativity are actually very, it's in a way quite similar to what I do in my science. So it is quite creative in many ways. I'm trying to think, I sort of get my data and then I've got to think about how I interpret that and how I present it on the page, or I have to make different, you know, even for myself to understand the data, I have to think, how shall I plot this up? What shall I do with this? And then thinking about the wider context and communicating that through the, you know, talks and papers and I don't know. So there's no kind of throwing out bits of data that don't fit, because they're actually often the ones that tell us something important. So, yeah, I think there's quite a bit more in common than I thought.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not anywhere near as good at art as Rowan, and, you know, the way she's been so creative has been quite inspiring, I think.
Yeah, but some really lovely kind of parallel motions. And the way you were talking about, I can't wait to send Rowan, it's like you're sending, whether or not it's sounds or photos or a plot, like, in some ways, that's your sketchbook. You're going, like, what's interesting? What can I hand over? Like, what are the things that might inspire the thought processes and how am I... You must have had a thought process when you were like, what's interesting, what can I share? It wasn't, you weren't just like, here is my hard drive.
It's been a boring day, what am I going to send her? But after a while I realised that everything was interesting to her because it's just another world. And there was an interesting bit, I thought, where she gave me some really nice sketchbook paper to take to Antarctica with me. I don't know what you hoped I would produce, Rowan. I couldn't do anything. I just was so taken up with the job, I think. Yeah. And I really wanted to draw something, but I was just sort of stuck. I couldn't. It was so strange. And I think that really shows the benefit of having someone whose role it is to be the artist or the communicator within, you know, science teams on the ground in Antarctica. It's so difficult to do because we don't have the money to put into proposals and things. But for me, that would have been brilliant to have you there, you know, and sort of doing the stuff while I could focus on the science.
I didn't have any expectation of what you could do. And I do know, I understand what the pressure's like, and I apologise for putting
I love the paper.
So how long is this exhibition on for? Give us the full details for anybody hoping to come and visit.
Yeah, so it's on till June 2026. And it's open, I think, Tuesday to Saturday, 10 till 4.
Wonderful.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Ice. Now, Rowan's exhibition is on at the Polar Museum at the Scott Polar Institute in Cambridge. It's totally free, and whilst you're there, you should explore some of the incredible artefacts they've got, telling the story of the history of polar exploration and the people involved. If you enjoyed this episode, do recommend it to someone else, and maybe even leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. See you next time.